are you going to get it?
I'll get it. What do you want?
Blood. I want your hot, steaming pussy blood all over my face.
Who is it, Lynn? Someone's on the phone upstairs.
Junk Food Dinner 107. This week we put on our aerobic spandex and tease our hair as we look at 380s heavy metal horror flicks. We accept the challenge to follow rock band The Tritons to an abandoned house with a creepy secret in 1987's Rock and Roll Nightmare. Then the Sebastians bring us 1984's Rocktober Blood, a tale about a possibly dead rocker with an aim to kill his former bandmates. Finally, a survivor of some brutal murders is haunted by her former predator, who is now a rockabilly guy, in Slumber Party Massacre 2 from 1987.
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, episode 107. This is the podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television looking for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. We're not professional film journalists or critics by any means. We are simply three geeks from Ohio with entirely too much time on our hands. Still stuck in Ohio, I am Kevin Moss, and I'm joined by my co-host Mark Fredo, who escaped to New York, not from New York, and Parker Bowman, who now resides in sunny California. Every week, we'll each bring a cult favorite to the table, recalling our personal experiences with the film, discussing its merits, and arguing why we did or did not enjoy it. This week, we take a look at three 80s heavy metal horror flicks. Up first, we have Rock and Roll Nightmare from 1987, then Rocktober Blood from 1984, and finally, Slumber Party Massacre 2, also from 87. But first, gentlemen, how you doing this week? You ready to get metal?
Yeah.
I'm always ready.
Hell yeah.
Nice. You got your studded wristbands on? Leather jackets?
Yep. Got my huge sunglasses on.
Yeah, I feathered my hair just for this podcast. So. Yeah, I don't know. We as a podcast generally tend to, you know, favor the 80s because, I mean, let's face it, that's the age we grew up in, and there's a lot of really great classic cult stuff from the 80s available, but this week I really feel like I have been beaten over the head with the 80s after these movies.
Yeah, there's really, it doesn't get much more 80s.
I mean, I really feel like I got an 80s bukkake after watching these three movies. Just for between the music, the hairstyles, everything.
Yeah.
The clothing.
I mean, it's something.
It is going to be a fun week. But yeah, man, how have you guys' weeks been?
Oh, man, pretty great. I bought myself some new pillows this week.
Ooh, that always makes for a nice week. I recently upgraded my pillows as well.
Yeah. It was a really good decision. So I was already flying high off of that, and then you guys are not going to believe who came in to my job today, because I didn't believe it.
Pillow people?
What?
Was it?
No, pillow people.
Oh, okay.
No. Gibby Haynes.
That guy touched my breast?
No, he didn't.
Oh, that's awesome, man, from the Butthole Surfers.
Yeah, it was, I usually, you know, we've talked to some really cool people on here, and I've met some really amazing people since I've been here in the celebrity world, and I don't often feel, like, starstruck or stupid, but I could not play it cool. And I was like, look, I'm sorry for even starting this sentence, but I'm a huge fan, and he like shook my hand and talked to me for a minute, and I was just like, you are a loser, why did you do that? So yeah, I've been like kicking myself all day for not just being like cool.
Well, what are you supposed to say?
Like, nothing. Like, yeah. Hey, I see you're buying some seltzer with your baby. I guess I'll just give you the nod. And then a couple hours later, Mike D came in.
Mike Dick?
Mike D from the Beastie Boys.
Oh. Mike Dick's the only Mike D I know.
Yeah, he's the only one I recognize.
No, this is Michael Diamond.
Oh, okay.
He comes in a lot, though, and he managed to remain cool around. But yeah, Gibby Haynes, I just could not do it, and I felt like a real chump.
Is Mike D the one that's dating Kathleen Hanna?
No, that's Ad Rock. They're married.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a great week of Pillows and bands I've listened to since I was like 11 or 12.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Next time, you just gotta say, look, I know who you are, man, and I don't give a fuck. You're just like anybody else to me.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that's how you play cool.
You think you're special, motherfucker? And like poke him real hard in the chest. You think you're special?
No, I would never do that.
That's how you have to, that's the only way to get respect from a celebrity. Like grab him like up on his collar and be like,
No, he's really tall. I don't even think I could reach his collar.
Well, you would have to. You have to stand up on a chair or something. Grab him and be like, I don't even care about Electric Larryland.
What's your favorite Butthole Surfers album while we're on the subject?
Oh, man. Well, I like Locust Abortion Technician.
Of course.
PCPPEP, I like.
Yeah.
What's the Rembrandt?
I don't know.
I can pull it. I'm not going to dig through my records to find it, but
I always thought Hairway to Steven was the best title.
Oh, yeah, that's a good title.
Well, excellent. Parker, how about you, man? Would you meet any cool 80s cult icons?
Yeah, I met some pillow people, and then I elbow dropped them really hard because that's what they're made for. No, I'm having a great week though, because The Avengers comes out Thursday night, and I'm fucking stoked.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is a pretty good week. I plan on watching all the movies leading up to The Avengers this week, so that will be fun. Even though they're playing them all at my local theater, but I don't really feel like paying $40 to see them all and hanging out in a theater all day. I'd much rather hang out in my house with my dog all day.
You could probably get your dog into that theater.
Probably. He's very tiny. But those are the options for me. I'm so much of a hermit that if it comes to sitting in my house and watching all the Avengers movies or going and sitting in some other building and watching all the Avengers movies, I'll pick my house. But yeah, so I'm very excited about that. Super excited about that, you might say.
Oh, I see, because they're superheroes?
Yeah.
Good one.
I was just saying, I was just using it like as an adjective. I think super is bigger than very is all I was going for. I didn't even realize there was a pun in there, but I'm happy there was.
Hey, this looks like a cool movie.
You got that right.
Yeah, man. I had a pretty fun week. I did some serious go-karting the other day, which
was
exciting. Yeah, for my work, we went, and it was supposed to be like a team building event where like me and some other people from work went.
Your team.
Yeah, but this was no bullshit go-karting though. This was like serious, like heavy duty go-karting where you had to wear like a fire retardant suit and like a head sock and a helmet and shit. It was pretty fun, but the bad news is now I have seatbelt shaped bruises all over my body. Like I'm like fucked up. Like I got hit a couple times, and like if I took off my shirt, it would look like I'd actually been in a car accident. So I'm a little sore, but I got to spend the day go karting and getting paid for it. So that was something.
That's what happens. So
yes,
you get pretty beat up when you're driving a go kart and somebody puts one of those banana peels on the track. You know?
There's definitely some Mario Kart references made.
You got hit with a turtle shell.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there was also a lot of Talladega Nights references made, which I expected, but, you know.
I wouldn't have expected that. Mm-mm. I didn't know that anybody remembered that movie.
People love it.
Wow.
All right, well, let's get into some nerd news.
The global resources of Junk Food Dinner Worldwide. It's time for Nerd News.
All right, the first piece of Nerd News. Now, Parker, you, as you just stated, are super excited for this Avengers movie. Well, It's already a big hit overseas. It smashed records with 178.4 million in its foreign debut. First of all, what do you think about, you know, these dirty foreigners getting their hands on our Captain America?
Whoa.
Goddamn right about that. These goddamn British get to watch our movies first.
Oh, my God.
That makes me sick.
But yeah, so for whatever reason, the Avengers opened foreign before it opened domestically, including...
I guess that reason is that they wanted the British pirates to put it online before it came out here or something. I have no idea why anybody would do this.
Yeah. But yeah, it was in UK, Mexico, Brazil, Australia.
I didn't know it was in Mexico. I should have driven down there. That would have been
Yeah, fun. You could have made a trip to Tijuana to see the Avengers. That would have been exciting.
Yeah. At the border, they'd be like, you're going to come down here and see a donkey show and party and drink some homemade tequila? I'd be like, nah, I got to see those Avengers. And it probably would have only been like 25 cents to see the movie. That would have been great. There's still time, I guess.
There you go. But yeah, so it raked in the dough, and it looks like it's going to be a huge movie here. Are you going to see it in 3D, or do you have a choice?
Well, my local theater is only playing it in 3D at midnight, so I'm going to the theater that's like 20 minutes away to see it in 2D, because fuck a bunch of 3D.
Are you going to see it in the D-Box?
No, I probably won't see it in the D-Box. Maybe. I mean, it's...
What's a D-Box?
It's this insane thing that they have at my theater where... it's like the Days of Thunder ride at King's Island, if you recall that. You sit in it and like...
Oh, shit, shut up. Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. And during the exciting scenes, it like shakes and shimmies and stuff.
So you get jostled around.
Yeah, you get to
while you're watching.
Drinks and pop.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, it sounds terrible.
I've never seen anybody in it before. And it's like twice as much.
Does it cost? Yeah, I was going to say, how much more does it cost?
It's twice as much. We were going to do it one day when we saw Hunger Games. We were like, oh, this is probably like $2 more. Let's go for it. But it's twice as much. So, yeah, it's stupid. It's real stupid.
What the fuck?
But yeah, so don't see it in the D-Box. Don't even see it in 3D.
Yeah.
But,
if you see it in the D-Box, you're a D-bag.
Yeah, I bet there's like one guy who's like seeing it in 3D and in the D-Box, and he's like going crazy.
Oh, there's more than one guy doing that.
Can you see it in 3D in the D-Box?
Yeah, it costs so.
$35.
Yeah.
Oh, man, yeah.
They just throw pieces of road at you.
They have a plastic Captain America that comes down from the rafters like that.
Like in popcorn?
Yeah.
But yeah, you guys want to put any wagers in on what's going to make more money domestically, the Avengers or Dark Knight?
I'll go with Avengers because it's PG-13, right?
Yeah. And
I think Dark Knight's going to be R.
Really?
I assume it'll probably be
PG-13.
I think PG-13.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I think the Avengers will make more because I think that the Dark Knight was helped out a lot by Heath Ledger's death and people who were like, you know, super into celebrity deaths and stuff went to go see it a lot more because of that, I think. So unless Tom Hardy dies, I don't think it'll get that bump again.
I'll go to Hollywood and kill the motherfucker.
I think everybody's pretty stoked about this new Batman.
Well, yeah, I think everybody's stoked for it, but I mean... I think it's hard to deny that it didn't enjoy a boost in sales, the second one.
Oh, I won't deny that. But I think it was well-deserved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then also, without Heath Ledger, I think people are probably less stoked. Like, I think this movie would rake in all the cash if Heath Ledger was still alive and there's still a Joker storyline.
I'm curious to see the next trailer, because I think that'll really up the interest.
Yeah, it comes out before the Avengers. So does the new Spider-Man trailer.
Oh, really? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. At first, I thought this Spider-Man trailer, or the Spider-Man movie, was going to be super dumb. But I've heard...
But now you just think it's going to be regular dumb?
No, I'm a little optimistic for it now. I think it might be alright. Maybe. I don't know. It might suck a lot, but... I like Andrew Garfield a lot. I guess that's basically where my optimism stems from.
All right, next piece of nerd news, more superhero news. It looks like Kick-Ass 2 has a script and a new director and should shoot this summer. The producer of the film is quoted as saying that Kick-Ass 2 will be filming this summer, and they're going to have a new director. The former director of Kick-Ass 1, Matthew Vaughn, is going to be co-writing the movie but will not come back to direct, so they're going to be getting a new director. But it looks like the original cast of Aaron Johnson and Chloe Moretz will be returning. No word on Nicolas Cage yet, but I'm sure he'll be in the mix somewhere. I don't know. I mean, I guess compared to, like, you know, Spider-Man and the Avengers and Dark Knight, this isn't, you know, the most exciting superhero news coming down the pike. But what do you guys think about a potential new Kick-Ass movie? Interested? Not interested?
I liked the first one when I saw it. And now I can't really remember anything about it. And then after I saw it, I read the comics, and the comics are way better. So I haven't read the second volume of the comics, but I assume that they're probably going to be better than the second movie. So I'll probably just stick with that. That and, like, the characters. Like, I think the second volume of books picks up reasonably close to the end of the first. So Chloe Moretz is, like, way older than she was 5 years ago. So I don't know how they're going to do that, if this just picks up, like, years and years later or what.
Yeah, I don't know. But if you can't get enough Chloe Moretz, she'll be hitting the screen in the Carrie remake. And she's been talking about it. She's been saying that the film will be based on Stephen King's novel rather than the Brian De Palma 1976 film. And Moretz says it'll be darker and much more psychological. Thank you, 15-year-old. I don't know. She says it's going to be kind of like The Black Swan, which, what the fuck? But yeah,
let John Malkovich say it.
Point.
What the fuck?
So yeah, I don't know. Why is this Chloe Moretz girl everywhere? I saw Hugo the other night. She's in that. She was in the Let the Right One In remake.
She's in a thing, you know, the new Tim Burton abortion.
Beetlejuice, yeah. 2.
No, Dark Shadows.
Yeah, well, look. It looks like Beetlejuice. I watched the trailer. It's just Beetlejuice with a vampire.
Vampire, yeah. Juice.
So I'm not very excited about a Carrie remake, and I'm certainly not excited.
Which I guess is blood.
So, yeah, I'm not very excited about a Carrie remake, and I'm certainly not excited with that 15-year-old gap-tooth weirdo in the lead. And I know what you're thinking. Are you really making fun of a 15-year-old girl?
Yeah.
But yes, I am. Yes, I am. That girl made more money than all three of us combined last year. So, whatever. I don't like her.
Well,
she rubs me the wrong way.
We could.
She's too old for her little girl body. She should be acting like a little kid.
A 15-year-old shouldn't be rubbing you anyway, Kevin.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And she only made more money than us because we probably couldn't have played a 14-year-old vampire girl in that movie.
Given the chance, I could have. No one called me. No one asked.
It would have to be all three of us, otherwise no do. Or at least I hope that you would be that loyal to not do it without us. Not do that single role without us.
But yeah, if you're interested, Carrie remake scheduled to kick off production June 1st, so get excited. Another thing that you will probably not get excited for, another remake, Poltergeist, being remade. And guess who's behind it? Your boy Sam Raimi. He's producing the Poltergeist remake. Jesus Christ. Between, you know, the Carrie remake and the Poltergeist remake, it's going to be like a trip to the video store circa 1985 at the your local multiplex. It's like, come on, let's get serious. I hope, if the only thing I hope is that if this remake of Poltergeist is anything like the original, it'll be marred in tragedy and everyone that stars in it will have something horrific happen to them in the near future. So, yeah.
Why? I mean, it's just a haunted house. Like, why remake it? I mean, are people just remaking movies now because they want to use these cool names? Because Poltergeist,
yes,
is a good name for a movie. Like, just make
that's
a haunted house movie.
They would rather go with name recognition than an original idea. Because with an original idea, there's the gamble that it'll fail. But with the name Poltergeist attached, it's bound to
piss a lot of people off.
Yeah. I do have fond memories of the original Poltergeist. It was one of the first movies I ever saw at the drive-in, so.
Yeah, I saw Poltergeist 3 in the drive-in.
Yeah, it's good drive-in material.
Yeah, I think it was playing with Rambo 3. That was a good night.
Absolutely. In more disturbing news, there's a new Frankenstein movie in the works. And it's going to be a found footage film, much like Cloverfield or the Blair Witch Project. It's going to be Luke Dawson writing the screenplay, and Lionsgate will be releasing the film, and it says it's equal parts Flatliners and Frankenstein. So yeah, I don't know what to think of that.
I think I'm pretty excited about it. Everybody knows their Frankensteins are so sick.
Universal is also remaking the original Frankenstein story with Guillermo del Toro involved. And, yeah, there's another feature called I, Frankenstein.
Is that apples?
So, yeah, there's going to be no shortage of Frankenstein films coming down the pike. So, I love Frankenstein. I love the original. He is so sick. but I don't know how excited I am about any of these movies. I mean, Guillermo del Toro, if anybody could do it upright, that might be the only one, but... This found footage one and this I, Frankenstein. I don't know.
Have you ever done it upright?
Oh, yeah, dude. In prison?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited for this. I think maybe the vampire fad will wane and we'll get like a nice, trendy amount of Frankenstein entertainment coming our way.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to the Creature of the from the Black Lagoon resurgence.
Yeah, there we go.
That'll be my salad days.
I would love to see a True Blood-esque sexy show with creatures from the Black Lagoon.
Now you're talking.
Creatures from the Blue Lagoon.
Right. Next piece of nerd news we have, it looks like the Upright Citizens Brigade are taking their new movie Freak Dance on the road. On May 9th. So we talked about this several nerd news ago about how the Upright Citizens Brigade crew is back and at it with their dance musical Freak Dance, which borrows heavily from the 80s dance movies that we know and love, like Breakin', and also heavily from the crazy 80s musicals like The Apple and all the good canon dance musicals that lined your video store shelves are rife for parody and Freak Dance. So if you live in any of these cities, you have your chance to see the movie on May 9th. If you're in Atlanta, Jacksonville, Charleston, Raleigh, Charlottesville, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, New York, Providence, or Boston. Unfortunately, if you're outside that area, no such luck. Which sucks for me and Parker, but it'll come soon enough. I watched the trailer. It looks awesome. It's got all the people from Upright Citizens Brigade involved. And I'm glad that they didn't like try to go the route of playing teenagers. Like, they know that they're too old for that shit now. So, like, all the people from the original Upright Citizens Brigade are, like, the parents of the kids who are trying to save their dance studio or whatever. But it looks hilarious, and it looks like it's got a lot of funny Upright Citizens Brigade-esque humor in it. So, I'm excited to see this. So, if you get a chance, Mark, hit that up and let me know what you think.
Yeah, I will absolutely do that.
And the last piece of nerd news that we have, sad piece of nerd news for myself, but it looks like Hulu will soon require you to enter your cable contract number in order to use its services. I guess the cable companies were getting pissed that so many people were, getting rid of their cable subscriptions in lieu of online media like Hulu and YouTube and Netflix Watch Instantly and all that stuff.
YouTube and Hulu.
So now, in an effort to totally put Hulu under, they're going to require you enter your cable subscription number to access their content, which doesn't make any sense because if you have cable and DVR, you don't need fucking Hulu. I need Hulu because I don't have cable and I want to watch The Daily Show. So, it's bad news, but whatever. I'll find a way.
Yeah, that's... That's like if you go to a Dairy Queen and you're like, hey, let me get like a chocolate cone. And they're like, well, you should really bring your chocolate ice cream from your home and show us that you have that. And then that's the only way I can give you a chocolate cone here at Dairy Queen.
Right. Yeah. Seems like a bad move.
Yeah. But they're basically just saying, hey, pirate things.
Right. Yeah, they're just exactly.
That's what
if you want people to pirate your shit, make it hard for them to access it. And yeah, see what happens. See what happens.
Yeah. Rapid Share doesn't ask for your cable number. It's just one click and you get whatever you want.
Right. All right, so let's move on to some cool stuff on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Oh, my God, it was a rough week for DVD releases and Blu-ray releases. I mean, there's some good Blu-rays, but for the most part, it was a shit-tastic week. Just to give you an idea of how shitty the DVD and Blu-ray releases this week were, I take these from Amazon, and I go by, you know, what's the best-selling, and you know, I try to pick out the interesting stuff. But usually, you know, the first 50 are things that, you know, you've heard of or at least know about. But this week, the number 18 top-selling DVD new release is Stronger Seniors Chair Exercise Program, 2-disc exercise program. That's number 18. The top 18 selling DVDs. That's number 18. All right. But anyway, moving on. So don't get your hopes up for a lot of cool stuff on DVD and Blu-ray this week, but there's some gems in the rough. But the first one is Haywire from 2011, directed by Oscar winner Steven Soderbergh. This dynamic action thriller introduces mixed martial arts superstar Gina Carano as Mallory Kane, a black ops agent for a government security contractor. Yeah, I don't know. Have you guys heard anything about this? It's got Bill Paxton.
I like that.
I like. Yeah. And infamous Dick Shaker, Channing Tatum, and Antonio Banderas, Michael Douglas, Michael Fassbender. Seems like an all-star cast, and then this MMA chick. So, I don't know. I like Steven Soderbergh. So this could be worth checking out. You guys hear anything about Haywire?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I heard it was all right, like, for an action movie starring an MMA chick.
Yeah, I didn't even know there were female MMA fighters.
There's a few of them.
They fight chicks or they fight dudes?
They fight chicks. Chicks are fighting chicks. It's a chick.
Now that I'd watch.
Oh,
that's foxy boxing.
Well, my big problem with the MMA always is that it was just, you know, half naked dudes rolling around on the ground with each other. But if we got chicks in the mix, I'll watch some of that.
Yeah, and Gina Carano is the foxiest of them all. So it works out well that she's in this movie.
All right. I'm watching it. Not this movie, but her fighting.
Yeah, just go on YouTube and watch some of her fights. And forget this movie. Forget all about this movie. Just watch her fights.
That's the maneuver.
Yeah, she was also on the new American Gladiators that they tried out a couple years ago with Hulk Hogan as the host.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was one of the gladiators.
Yikes.
She was very good, though. She almost never lost.
Yeah, she always nailed him with the tennis balls.
Yeah, and she like yanked him down off of that pyramid made out of pillows.
Now Mark's sleeping on those pillows.
Yeah.
Next release. This is probably one to get your wallets out for. Wizard of Gore and the Gore Gore Girls double feature on Blu-ray.
Oh, yes.
If any movie deserves the Blu-ray treatment, it's anything by Herschel Gordon Lewis, because those fucking movies are crisp. I'm sure they look even better on Blu-ray. So yeah, you got The Wizard of Gore from 1970 and The Gore Gore Girls from 1972. Try saying that three times fast. On one Blu-ray for $10. Go pick it up. Sounds awesome. I might have to buy this. Or will I?
You will.
Yeah, well. Have you guys seen The Gore Gore Girls? Of course, we talked about Wizard of Gore. Three or four episodes back.
I have, yeah.
What's that all about?
Gore Girls.
Sounds good.
Yeah. You'd like it. It's a lot easier to concentrate on.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I'll pick that up. Also on Blu-ray this week, no doubt, to coincide with the upcoming release of Men in Black 3. We got Men in Black 1 and Men in Black 2 making their Blu-ray debut. I don't know. I will not apologize. I like these Men in Black movies, and I'll probably go see Men in Black 3. I think they're good movies. I think they're fun.
They are fun.
And I like them. So I don't know if I need the Blu-rays or anything, but I'll watch them again before going to see Numero Tres. What do you guys, what's your favorite Men in Black alien? Vincent D'Onofrio.
Now, I like Johnny Knoxville with two heads.
Yeah, it's a good one.
He was entertaining.
Also, if you like mid-90s reminiscing, check out Clueless on Blu-ray this week. Again, I don't know why you need a Blu-ray of this, but I like this movie. And, directed by Amy Heckerling of Fast Times at Ridgemont High. It's the movie that made a star out of Alicia Silverstone. What Aerosmith started, Amy Heckerling finished and brought Alicia Silverstone into our hearts and minds. But yeah, this movie's fun. It's, you know, it's the Heathers of our generation.
It is absolutely not the Heathers of our generation.
All right, but it is a good teen comedy.
It's better. Well, let me ask you this. When was the last time you watched Clueless?
Not too long ago. I caught it on cable.
Yeah. I don't think it's very good.
It's fine.
Having two roommates who are obsessed with it, I am, not into Clueless.
Yeah.
It just doesn't hold up very well.
Alright. I haven't seen it in a long time, but Jeremy Sisto's in there, so I'm giving it the thumbs up. Sisto is awesome.
Mighty Mighty Boston's are in it, too.
Well, if nothing else, it'll be a fun time capsule.
When
our kids are doing the wacky 90s ska movies of of the heyday, they'll cover Clueless.
Yeah. Also, Jawbreakers.
When are we going to do a wacky 90s ska movie?
What, like Meet the Deedles?
Mm-hmm.
Clueless and Meet the Deedles, I think, are the only two.
Basketball?
Yeah. Ska wasn't popular for very long. They had to really squeeze
that. Yeah, we had a big window of like 3 months.
Yeah, they had to capitalize quickly.
We could do The Harder They Come.
That's not 90s.
Sure.
And that's actually a good movie.
Clueless is a remake of that, right?
Yeah. Paul Rudd plays Jimmy Cliff.
Oh, and it has... old dead, what's her name? Brittany Murphy.
Yeah. She's all there.
Yeah. Paul Rudd's there.
Yep. Wallace Shawn.
Mm-hmm. Stacey Dash's butt is there.
That's true. Well, we've talked about Clueless for a really long time.
Yeah, let's move on. More late 80s, early 90s nostalgia comes your way in the form of the Tim Burton Blu-ray box set. 7 Tim Burton movies on Blu-ray. We got Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Beetlejuice, Batman, Batman Returns, Mars Attacks, Corpse Bride, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Besides Corpse Bride and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, these are all winners in my book.
Not bad at all.
Yeah, so pretty cheap, way cheaper than buying all of those Blu-rays individually. You can get this for like $40. It's only on Amazon, though, so don't go looking for it at your local Walmart or Best Buy. But yeah, I don't know. I like a lot of these movies. This is if you want to remember Tim Burton before he was just shitting out Johnny Depp movies, here's your chance. I'm glad you... Honestly, though, look at that. It's a Tim Burton box set. You only got two Johnny Depp ones in there, so... I like that ratio. Back when Michael Keaton was Tim Burton's Johnny Depp. Last two DVDs we have this week. We've got Drive-In from 1976. I've never heard of this movie, but it sounds right up my alley. This is a slice-of-life comedy that both documents and satirizes small-town life in rural Texas, where the only entertainment is the roller rink during the day and at night the local drive-in. Hosting a cross-section of the town's population, the drive-in comes to life at night. Parents show up with their kids in tow, teenage paramours arrive with their dates, and the local gangs fuel their rivalry under a gigantic screen in the snack bar. Yeah, this doesn't have anybody famous in it, but it has a really cool, mid-70s wacky comedy cover art, and that's newly remastered and on DVD for the first time, so I have no idea. This could be total garbage, but it sounds like it has a lot of stuff that I like in it, you know? Gangs, teens, drive-ins. I don't know. Check this out. It's from the guy that brought us Dobie Gillis. So, get excited for drive-in. And the last DVD, and normally there's a whole slew of shitty horror movies that I can choose from in the DVD section. This week we only had one, and that's Rise of the Animals from last year. And this movie looks fairly unremarkable, but the box art, I do have to give it credit, as it features very prominently a squirrel with an eyeball in its mouth, a moose with guts hanging off its antlers, and two people with guns. So this is
all of those things.
Yeah, this is an animal attacking movie. After infiltrating an all-girl slumber party, which I also like, and which we'll talk about later, in a remote cabin, which Parker likes, Wolf, an awkward pizza delivery driver, Mark, I know you like pizza, spends a passionate evening with a beautiful teen named Samantha. Then, next morning, Samantha is gone, and the cabin in the woods, I don't think that was an accidental write-up, is attacked by a family of deer after a brutal massacre in the cabin. The cabin is bathed in blood, and the gruesome remains of deer and teenage girl are all over the place. Anyway, they have to fight all these animals that have gone crazy. And, it's, one of these nature's attacks. Straight to DVD, and it's got a squirrel eating an eyeball on the cover, so check it out. Rise of the Animals.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah. Maybe I misjudged this.
Sounds good to me, man. It's got cabins. It's got mooses. What do you want?
Yeah. All right, so enough of this buffoonery. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into the real meat and potatoes and jump right in to our heavy metal horror theme show with our first film of the evening, Rock and Roll Nightmare. So stick around.
Junk Food Dinner is the number one cult movie podcast among really awesome, cool people. Do you know it? We know it. Now we need iTunes to know it. Search iTunes for Junk Food Dinner. Then leave us a review telling the world how much you like the show. Cap it off with a nice 5-star rating. Then subscribe to our show to get the newest episodes as soon as possible. If everyone does that, we'll take the iTunes world by storm, gaining new listeners. If no one does that, Kevin, Mark, and Parker will die homeless and riddled with disease.
Thank you. I am Triton, the Archangel. You've overstepped your line again, Bob. It is the Creator's highest law that keeps you in your dark place, and yet you and your brethren still insist on coming into this world to try and steal a place in the world of the living. When will you ever learn?
So, you wish to battle with me again? This is the last time you interfere with my plans. Today, you will be the loser.
I am bound by this law to strike you from this place. It's my job. This is your end.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 107. This is our heavy metal horror fantastique episode, and we're going to kick it off with Rock and Roll Nightmare from 1987. This is a film written by and starring John Michael Thor and a bunch of other people who you probably don't know unless you're his friend. About a band called the Tritons who are splitting. They're getting out of the city. They're going up to this country house, and they're going to record their new album. A couple of them just got married. This is their honeymoon. They're just, like, hanging out, and they have this goofy manager, sound tech guy who's there with them, and they're in this house where some terrible things happened to them. Unbeknownst to them, some terrible things happened before they got there. Unbeknownst to them, of course. The house is actually a gateway to hell, if you guys can believe that. And so one by one, they are subjected to nightmares of rock and roll proportions while they have sex in the shower and record their terrible album. This movie was made in Canada, which I think is fairly obvious a lot of the time. It's only 83 minutes, which, again, not that apparent while you're watching it. This has one of the craziest endings I've ever seen in a movie, which I think we'll probably end up talking about. We can put a little spoiler thing on there. John Michael Thor, shirtless a lot of the time in here. I don't know. I saw this movie a while ago, and it kind of stuck in my brain. And so when we did this show, it was a toss-up between this and Black Roses. But yeah. This one out. Zombie Nightmare from John Michael Thor.
Oh, man, there's so many.
Yeah.
Shock of Dead.
Yeah. John Michael Thor, no stranger here, but... Sorry. This was directed by John Fasano, who you might remember as being the writer of Universal Soldier: The Return.
Nope.
He also, he directed Black Roses, which is why it was difficult to pick. So he directed about 10 episodes of Kamen Rider, which Michael from All Clues No Solutions sent us a bunch of, and I watched some of, and it was kind of weird. He was assistant director on Zombie Nightmare, which I mentioned a little bit ago. I don't know, this is a really, really ridiculous movie, and I can't wait to hear what you guys think of this.
Well, yeah, it's funny, when we talked about doing a heavy metal horror theme show, it's pretty crazy to think how popular and prevalent the subgenre was. Because, I mean, we picked three, you know, kind of the classic staples of the genre, but there were a whole plethora of ones we could have picked. And I guess someone wised up sometime in the 80s and was like, you know, these kids with their jean jackets and their feathered hair, their money spends just as good as anybody else's. So let's appeal to these bastards in a big way.
Let's get them to stop buying inhalants for a couple days. Come see our movie.
Exactly. So yeah, this movie is ridiculous. Were you guys familiar with John Michael Thor before this movie? Did you ever hear any of his albums?
Yeah, I mean, I knew of him. I wasn't like a fan or anything, but I knew of him as like a reference point.
That he was like an insane person.
Well, after seeing this movie
proves that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, you know, I had heard of him and I had seen his album covers. If for those of you not in the know, he was I guess late 70s through the 80s Canadian heavy metal performer that often performed shirtless and was, you know, ripped with the long hair, looking very very much like the god that his name would imply. But yeah, wacky stage show, really cheesy, over the top 80s heavy metal. And this was his time to shine. He was big enough in Canada where somebody said, let's give this guy a whole movie. And this is the result. The whole gang of people in this band are ridiculous. The keyboard player looks like Sandra Bernhardt, and you see her boobs. The drummer, I don't know if he was supposed to be doing a fake British accent the entire time or if he really was supposed to be British.
I couldn't tell either.
Yeah. It was terrible.
Terrible.
There's a lot of weird penis puppets that are used for comedic effect throughout this movie, which are bizarre. There are tons of really awkward sex scenes between members of the band and their girlfriends. The most awkward of which is the John Michael Thor sex scene where him and his lady friend are having sexual intercourse in the shower as if they've never done it before. And it's super awkward and super weird. But between all the crazy lovemaking, we have one of the most ridiculous endings in all of movie history where John Michael Thor fights the worst Satan puppet of all time.
way up there.
Yeah. The music in this is terrible. It's just an all-around terrible movie, but it's got just something about the charm of these movies. All these movies that we're talking about are bad, except for maybe Slumber Party Massacre 2. But they all have a certain charm to them that is undeniable. So you can't help but be totally engulfed by the cheesiness, even if the movie is terrible, which this movie certainly is. I can't believe that they gave this dude isn't a whole movie, but I'm kind of glad that they did, so that we have this crazy artifact of an era gone by to relish in. So, you know, while I can't give this a whole endorsement because it is a terrible, terrible film and filled with terrible, terrible things, it is entertaining to watch, especially if you have a group of friends and, you know, it's plenty of intoxicants on hand.
Yeah, we showed this as a midnight at the theater back in January, and it got some great reactions.
I bet.
Yeah, this movie is... yeah, it's one of the stupidest, most poorly made things that I've ever seen, but I also kind of love it. The beginning of this movie starts out, like, some people die or something, and then the credits play over this POV shot of a monster running around, you know, a house. And then after you see that for, like, 5 minutes, there's 5 minutes of, like, long, wide shots of this van that holds this band, like, just driving around.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you couldn't have just played the credits over the van driving. You needed both of these opening credits sequences.
Yeah, the editing in this movie is maddening. It is, like, the slowest-paced editing, especially at the beginning. You're like, do something, for fuck's sake!
Yeah, there are so many scenes in this movie where people do absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Like this van, the van riding scene is similar to the car opening scene of Birdemic, where it's just driving for fucking ever. And, you know, then there'll be like two of the people in the band will be like, hey, let's go out to the lake that's behind the house and let's walk there. And then we get to watch them walk all the way from the house to the fucking lake, which takes forever.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Just, it's insane. I like that in this movie. The band is like, hey, let's go to this cabin, you know, because the record label says we need to crank out 10 new minutes of music with no interruptions, no distractions, plus bring our girlfriends and wives, certainly.
Yeah, and fuck the whole time.
Yeah. They also, they're supposed to come up with 10 new minutes of music, yet they are clearly rehearsing old songs that they've already perfected. Brilliant, brilliant material.
I was going to say, I'm glad you used the word perfected there.
They also don't party at all, and they go to sleep at reasonable hours, which is weird for a band, but they are Canadian, I guess.
Canadian, yep.
Boy, there's a lot of scenes where these people play their shitty music. This is another, it's, and these are almost more boring than the scenes of just driving or just walking to a lake. They're just playing these awful, awful songs for a long time and nothing happens. And I thought that it was really awful in this movie that that happened. But then, as we'll learn with Rocktober Blood, it's even worse in that movie. So I feel better about these scenes. Satan's powers, when he shows up, involve throwing toy monsters at you. That's all he can do. This whole time...
So bad.
This whole time we thought that Satan was some sort of bad guy. No, it just turns out he shows up and he throws fucking stuffed animals at you. That's the extent of his power. Boy, oh boy. Yeah, I don't know. This movie is really awful, but it's fun, ironically.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah, it's super fun in an incredibly ironic way, and if you want to goof on something, this is pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. I would be interested to, like, hear what the people involved with this movie think about it now, if it's just, like, the most embarrassing weekend of their life and it's caught on film forever. Or if they, like, really take pride in this and think it's a good movie, because it certainly is not. And
I'm curious if they wanted to drink, but somebody on set was being a butthole and wouldn't let them.
Yeah. Can we talk about... okay, spoiler alert. We're going to talk about the twist at the end here, and I say that very loosely, because if you're worried about spoiling this movie... Don't worry about it.
It's not like our Cabin in the Woods spoilers here. This is, I mean, I do feel like this ending kind of has to be seen to be believed, though.
Yeah. Besides the crazy, shitty Satan puppet that John Michael Thor fights, we get the information that all the people
that
have been at this cabin this whole time were all in John Michael Thor's head, and he just created them to lure Satan here.
Yep.
To defeat him. So if that's the case, like, what was John Michael Thor doing this whole movie? Just fucking around by himself with his imaginary friends?
Yeah, it's like high tension.
It makes no fucking sense.
And if they were all imaginary, why did he spend so much time having sex with one of them?
Right, yeah, was he just jerking off in the shower?
Well, that would make more sense.
Yeah. I didn't like how many times he called Satan Bub either. That really rubbed me the wrong way.
You know, it's Beelzebub. They're casual.
Yeah.
Also, he reads a lot of Wolverine comics. So he talks about Wolverine. Also, when he reveals that, like, he's there to kick Satan's ass and everything like that, like, he kind of, like, Dragon Ball Z powers up for a while and, like, takes off a bunch of his clothes. And, like, he takes off his clothes.
Fluffs his hair up.
Yeah, yeah. He, like, takes off his clothes and, like, starts flexing his muscles and everything like this. And it's supposed to be like some sort of reveal, but he's exactly the amount of buff that he was earlier in the shower scene. So it's not much of a reveal, but he's buff.
Yeah, I wasn't shocked to learn that he looks the same outside of the shower without a shirt on.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, how was Satan at the house, you know, before the band got there? If John Michael Thor, like, lured him out. Also, is he even in a band?
Yeah, nothing about this movie makes sense, but it's fun to riff on if you've got an extra hour and a half.
And you do.
Yeah, of course you do.
For something like this, you do.
I also there was a lot of kind of Coke product placement in this movie.
Yeah,
and I wonder if Coke. Honestly threw in money on this.
They probably threw in a bunch of free Coke.
Yeah, that could be. But they really were trying to sell that Coke in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a movie. What was your favorite song?
I don't remember
any. Maybe at the end of the show we'll discuss out of these three movies which had the best music.
Wow.
Oh my God.
When I go ahead and spoil that conversation, it's not this one.
Right.
Or any of them. All right, well, I think that just about wraps it up for Rock and Roll Nightmare. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about October Blood.
We gotta let the people know.
I know you will find this hard to believe, but podcasting is not a lucrative business. In fact, Kevin, Mark, and Barker barely have enough money to feed their gambling, drug, and pornography addictions. So, needless to say, they cannot afford big advertising campaigns to promote the show. That's where you come in. Do you enjoy what you hear every week? Help spread the word about Junk Food Dinner by telling your friends about us. These can be real, flesh and blood friends, or just some creeps you talk to on movie-related message boards. Either way, don't keep JFD all to yourself. Spread the word, you selfish bastard. Just kidding, you know we love you, baby.
And if you like it and you want it, you'll get greedy for it. You'll want it every day of your life, and it can happen to you.
Again, but I saw what I saw.
Did you speak to him?
No.
Did you touch him?
No. Lynn, you couldn't have seen him. The man is dead. Look, I don't care whether you believe me or not. I don't want to talk about it anymore. If you don't get a hold of yourself, they're going to send you back to that shrink. Look, you'd better shut up. I'm going to fire you right here, now, on the spot.
Whatever you say.
Forget it. Come on and work out with me. It'll help you relax.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 107, our heavy metal horror week. The next film on the heavy metal docket is Rocktober Blood from 1984 from the fine people at Vestron Video. I first heard about this movie. There's a stoner doom heavy metal band that I like quite a bit called Acid Witch from Detroit. And on the back of their album, they have a picture of them like surrounded by all their, Halloween and horror and heavy metal memorabilia. And there's lots of cool, like obscure stuff in the pile. And one of the things in the pile is a VHS copy of Rocktober Blood. And I was like, man, if these badass heavy metal guys are into this Rocktober Blood, it's got to be one badass heavy metal movie. So I picked it for this show under that impression that it was some long-lost badass heavy metal horror flick, only to find out not so badass and not so heavy metal. It is a movie, though. And it is on VHS, never released on DVD, thankfully. This is the story of a heavy metal band led by a guy named Billy Eye. And the music in this movie is provided by the band Sorcery. And if you don't know who Sorcery is, they were a band that I guess it would be like if, Judas Priest was not hellbent for leather, but instead hellbent for magic. They incorporated magic in all their shows, and they dressed like wizards. And at one point, Van Halen was opening up for them. But they also starred in the movie Stunt Rock, if you've seen that movie. There's clips of them performing live, mixed with various Australian stuntmen doing crazy shit in cars and motorcycles, which is an excellent movie, and you should check it out. But this movie features more music by the band Sorcery, but they don't appear in the movie. It is all mimed by a bunch of terrible, terrible white assholes that just suck. The band is fronted by this guy, Billy Eye. He's just a total dickhead. He's recording his super high-pitched vocals. I mean, just the first 5 minutes of this movie, and you feel like you're just being bashed over the fucking head with this guy's incredibly high-pitched, yes! Because you get them over and over again, just in that opening sequence. But he goes out for a strange piece of pussy, and much to the chagrin of his girlfriend, she goes back to record her backup vocal. She wants to be, you know, the lead singer, but Billy won't have it. He says, "Who do you think I wrote Rainbow Eyes for, baby? You. So go sing backup." So she does. She goes to sing her backup vocals, but she's just not getting it. So she goes to take a dip in the old jacuzzi, as you would do, when you're recording your heavy metal album. But no sooner than she hops in the jacuzzi, and then Billy returns on a killing spree, murdering pretty much the entire band and the studio engineer named Kevin, and which I was very sad about. everybody but his lady. What the fuck is her name? Lynn. That's like the most action that you get for like the first half hour, because then we cut forward to the future, where Lynn is now a big movie star, or not big movie, a big rock and roll star, and Billy Eye has been put to death for the brutal murders that he committed 2 years ago. So we get a lot of bullshit of Lynn doing aerobics and all kinds of nonsense, but then Billy Eye starts appearing again. And is he back from the dead? What's going on? He starts murdering people, and we get a lot of shitty 80s heavy metal. This movie may be worse than Rock and Roll Nightmare.
Different kind of worse.
Yeah, it's doesn't have any shitty Satan puppets, but what it does have is the Sebastians.
That's right.
This movie in the opening credits proudly boasts that it's from the Sebastians. This is directed by Beverly Sebastian, who directed such things as Gator Bait and Gator Bait 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Running Cool, American Angels, Baptism of Blood. Just all kinds of crazy shit. This also was written by Ferd Sebastian, which I cracked the fuck up because I thought it was Fred Sebastian. They just misspelled it in the title credits. But no, dude's name is Ferd. Ferd Sebastian. The Sebastians hard at work making awesome stuff like Rocktober Blood. This is not the badass heavy metal horror movie I had expected it to be. It's just the acting is absolutely terrible. There's just all kinds of terrible dialogue in it. My favorite being, "I want your hot, steamy pussy blood all over my face," which is a line that Billy Eye seethes over the phone to Lynn at one point, which is disturbing in so many levels, and I really hope that's not where they got the title for this movie from. There's, like I said, all kinds of needless aerobic scenes and clothing for no reason. The song Rainbow Eyes is oddly compelling for some reason to me.
No, it's not.
Yeah, this is just over the top 80s in every way. Just as much as Rock and Roll Nightmare was just an 80s extravaganza, this is maybe even more so. Just the fashions, the arcade games, the heavy metal.
The Ferd.
It's so 80s. It's insane. But unfortunately, it doesn't add up to a good movie. So, Rocktober Blood, thanks, but no thanks. But what did you guys think of Rocktober Hot Steamy Pussy Blood?
This is one of the worst things that there could be. This movie... I knew that I was in for some punishment.
That's a good box copy.
I knew I was going to be in for some punishment when the title card popped up and it said, "A film by the Sebastians," and there was an apostrophe before the S. You can't have correct grammar in your fucking title cards of your movie that you made.
Yeah, that's why I thought Ferd was another error.
Yeah. Oh boy. There's, you know, in that beginning scene where old dude is going crazy and trying to cut boobs, you know, he's like cutting the girl's boobs, Lynn or whatever her name is, and then like a security guard or something walks in, and he's like, "Hey, security guard, I'm gonna kill your ass." And I thought that was kind of funny. But then he like chases after the security guard, and then it cuts to 2 years later. I says, "Hey, the action is not resolved here. He just ran after the security guard." What the fuck? Like, they just cut that short. And, you know, I thought it was bad filmmaking, but it turns out they were just foreshadowing the shitty ending.
Does that make it good filmmaking?
It's fantastic filmmaking. I learned in this movie that if you are trying to kill a young blonde rock and roller, or maybe not so much if you're trying to kill her, but if you're like trying to put her to sleep peacefully, all you have to do is put a hot iron to her neck, and she will just pass right out.
That's scary.
It's stupid as hell. If you put an iron to somebody's neck, they would like scream in pain, not close their eyes, and just fall over. That's
well,
fucking...
Have you tried it?
I've tried it. I tried it after watching the movie to make sure. That's gotta be the worst kill scene in like the history of slasher movies, I would think. Sometimes I go crazy with hyperbole, but that has to be the worst.
Pretty bad.
You wouldn't die from a hot iron to the neck. You'd scream horrifically for like a long time because it would be painful. You wouldn't just close your eyes and call it a day.
That's a different time.
The climax of this movie, like the last 20 minutes, which is generally the part of the movie where you expect, you know, your rising action to kind of come to a head, and for the most exciting part of the movie, to maybe get some conflict resolution, this movie, they decided to make the conflict just people performing shitty songs live on stage, the same shitty songs that we've already heard like 8 times over the course of the movie.
Yeah, but that Rainbow Eyes, I could hear that at least 10 more times.
No, what?
I'm just kidding.
I didn't hear it the first time. So, you know, at the part of the movie where, you know, if you've seen a slasher movie before, this is the part where you're expecting, like, tons of people to die, and then for the main girl to, like, find the bodies of her dead friends and then fight off a killer and all this. No, it's just them singing this fucking stupid, shitty song live on stage. It's probably, to use more hyperbole, that's probably not hyperbole, probably one of the worst climaxes to a movie I've ever seen. And then the killer shows up, and he's like handcuffing the girl to him. And, you know, he's like doing some violent things or something. And the girl's like bodyguard or security guard or whoever who's like watching from backstage. He's like talking to this other guy, and he's all, "Hey, what's that guy doing? Is that the killer?" And he's like, "Yeah, but let's just see where this goes." And then they just watch this guy who's apparently supposed to be dead, do violent things on stage. They're just like, "Hey, nah, let's take our time here and see how this plays out." And then the one guy he's talking to, the security guy, you know, the guy he's talking to, is bleeding from the head because he shows up and he's all, hey, man, what's going on here on stage? And the security guy's like, hey, man, what happened to your head? You get hit or something? And he's like, yeah, I got hit, but don't worry about that now. You should be worried about that. This guy gets hit and he's bleeding from the head. And then you got this guy who used to be dead on stage, handcuffed to your friend who you swore to protect in an earlier scene. And you're talking about, oh, let's just play it cool and see where this goes. Boy, it's just awful. They bide their time, you know, all the way through the fucking encore. They just wait it out. And then they hit the guy during his song. They hit him with a guitar. And then the guy just, like, keeps singing, you know?
As you do, if you're a professional.
He just keeps singing. And then that's the end of the movie.
Yeah. Awful.
It's so fucking stupid. This movie sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, well, how do you end your movie with no ending?
Yeah. It is abysmal.
I agree with you guys. I like this movie a lot. No, this was a tape that I found actually before I moved to Brooklyn. When I came to visit, I found this in a video store for a buck and picked it up, and I watched it a couple times, goofing on it. And then, you know, like I said, we showed it at the theater and stuff. And, you know, the Sebastians have made other fine films, especially Gator Bait, which we should probably do at some point. But yeah, this is a lot better in box art and name and idea.
Right.
It's not very good. Rainbow Eyes is terrible. The music in this is just terrible.
But they did release a soundtrack to this, believe it or not, on vinyl.
Yeah, which I would probably buy if I saw it. if I saw it in the wild, I would certainly pick it up.
It's got a sweet cover. The video, yeah. It's the same picture as on the box art, which is the dude in the skeleton mask with the chick over his shoulder with the knife, and that's cool art.
Yeah,
I can see why people would pick this up off the shelf at Blockbuster and be like, oh, hell yeah.
Right, exactly.
So many disappointed Thursday nights for a kid in a in an Iron Maiden t-shirt. Thanks to this movie, I'm sure.
I could have spent my money on inhalants. what else can I say about this? Ferd is a funny name.
You like, what did you think about that weed smoking scene at the beginning before he goes on his killing spree?
That was just propaganda.
I do think you are too down on the aerobic scene, though. That was my favorite. I shouldn't say my favorite scene of the movie. That was the only watchable scene of the movie.
Absolutely. I will give you that.
There's a lot of aerobics in this from what I...
Yeah, heard. Well, and that's the thing. I wasn't down on it. By all means, throw some aerobics in there. But it's so fucking out of the blue.
Yeah, yeah.
And pointless, like much of the shit in this movie. But it's just like, you just don't put two and two together. If I'm like, okay, we've got this like badass like metal chick. Oh, you know what she's probably into? Aerobics. Well, it is the 80s. I mean, come on.
Yeah. She probably wouldn't have been into aerobics.
Yeah, she'd be into smoking crack cocaine.
Yeah.
With the LA guns. But yeah. Rocktober Blood. Don't waste your time. All right, so we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about our final rock and roll horror film of the evening, and that is Slumber Party Massacre 2. So stick around.
Tired of only hearing your junk food dinner hosts talk to you? You want to start talking to them? Then pick up your Zach Morris-like cellular phone and dial 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Leave us a message about the movies we've talked about. Did we give a good review to a movie you think sucks? Did we take a crap on your favorite movie? Let us know. Or call it to suggest a movie, or tell us why you hate LeBron James. Remember to leave a name and the city you represent when you call. We are very lonely, and rarely hear the voices of other humans.
So dial this number now if you dare. Tell them that he sent you.
Got some weird friends.
I have got the fastest growing bit I have ever had in my entire life. I mean, look at this thing.
I think your sweetheart's been taking too many diet pills.
Here's a chicken sandwich if you want it. Yeah.
She should have listened to her sister.
Don't go all the way.
Because when she and her band get ready to party,
do anything you want to. Good time.
It's more than just a great time.
I didn't know girls really did this stuff.
It's Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Now it's time for the fun part.
He's in his house somewhere.
Well, it's 9 o'clock, I'm ready to rock. My motorcycle's out of hock. Jump on back, if you hold on tight.
Bastard! You killed Mallory!
Because let's burn. Slumber Party Massacre 2. If you go, don't go all the way.
Oh God, anybody got any tranks?
Welcome back to the Junk Food Dinners. Up next is Slumber Party Massacre 2. This is the sequel to Slumber Party Massacre 1, a.k.a. Slumber Party...
What?
Slumber Party Massacre. which we did a few weeks ago and we all generally enjoyed this movie. Picks up with a different director, a different cast, one of the same characters, played by a different person. It is directed by Deborah Brock, who directed Rock and Roll High School Forever, which I love. And it has very similar aesthetics. So Crystal Bernard of Wings fame, if you can call it fame, plays mm-hmm. Courtney Bates. She has some friends who are in a band with her. One of them is Kimberly MacArthur, who was in a Jason movie. One of them is Juliet Cummins, who was also in a Jason movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Heidi Kozak was in an Andy Sedaris movie. So we got a pretty good cast here, as you might suspect. They're in a band, these girls. They've got boyfriends, and they want to have a slumber party. Go out to some house. You know, where they're going to rock out, and they're going to make out with their boyfriends. Crystal Bernard has a crush on some dude. She's got a picture of him that she's kissing when he's not around, as you did back in these days before Instagram. And
so topical.
And you know, so they go out. Crystal Bernard, of course, you know, she survived Slumber Party Massacre 1. And, you know, she's having these nightmares and these crazy dreams about the killer, who now all of a sudden is a rockabilly guy. For some reason. It's, you know, it's very weird. It's sort of like if you went to go see Jason Part 7, and Jason was all of a sudden a Kraken monster. Totally different things for some reason.
I would like to see a rockabilly Jason.
That would be pretty good. But yeah, so she's having these scary dreams, which I think is really cool. I mean, it's, I don't know if they put too much thought into this or whatever, but it's, I mean, it's obviously a sort of take on Freddy's popularity, these dreams and stuff being so scary. But, the thing that I remember most from the first one is, you know, the ending scene where these three girls who survive, like, you know, they, quickly and artfully, I felt, you know, made it seem like the worst was yet to come for these girls. Like, even though they survived the night, you know, the terror of all their friends being killed and the terror of having to kill this drill killer, you know, is going to haunt them for years and years to come. And that's, you know, exactly what it's doing, apparently, in this movie. So I like that. I don't know if they did it on purpose or they just wanted to capitalize on Freddy or what, but I thought it was cool. And yeah, like, you know, like I said, these kids, they go out and they are, doing some rock and roll music and some partying. There's a great party scene in this, a great dance champagne pillow fight that happens where, foxy girls are dancing while hitting each other with pillows and spraying champagne on each other. That's, really a monument to good 80s filmmaking. And, somewhere along the lines, in this movie, as you might expect, this bad guy, who's now sort of a mix between like Danzig and Mojo Nixon and Shane from The Walking Dead, he comes alive. He's not just in the dreams. He's real. He starts killing everybody, and it's just fantastic. You know, the whole time, this broad Crystal Bernard, she's all, you know, I got these dreams, and blah, I'm so scared of my dreams. They seem so real. And then all of a sudden, they are real. This dude's coming after him. I figured that this movie would sort of maybe take on, like at one point, Crystal Bernard has a dream that one of her friends gets disfigured, and then she's kind of gone for a while, and they're looking for her. I figured that that's kind of how this movie would go, never seeing it, that she would have dreams that her friends get disfigured or murdered, and they would be murdered. But no, like this dude just comes alive, and he's just all of a sudden there and killing everybody in a room. Like there's no stalking and picking off girls one by one. He's just in the room, like just taking people out all over the place while they're all together in one room. And I think that's just magical and really cool and really different. And then once that happens, once you know, the guy's there and they're all aware that they're in trouble by this guy who has this super cool guitar with a drill on it, you know, they do away with scariness. I think that's something that a lot of times slasher movies, especially like slasher movies post 1985 or something, do well to do. Like, just stop trying to pretend that you're going to be scary and just make with the kills and the chase scenes and forgo any tension, because there isn't any. We just want to see people get killed. And this movie does that great. And yeah, I think this movie's great. I never saw it. And it's just marvelous. It's super fun. And it's the gore is great. There's a lot of fun gore. There's foxy broads. There's you know, a wacky killer who's got a lot of charm and moxie about him, I thought. This movie is just marvelous, I feel. How do you guys feel about it?
Yeah, I think of the three movies we watched this week, this is hands down the best of the bunch. A true monument to filmmaking next to these other movies. Yeah, I think this is awesome. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I you know, the dude just showing up and wrecking shop, I think, is awesome. I think in terms of, you know, there were so many of these kind of, you know, slashers that, that then just got franchised to death, and of them, I think this is one of the better sequels to ever come out of that. Should we do three now?
I think so.
I think so, too. But that might be ill-advised. But, you know, I guess we'll see. But yeah, this movie's super fun. I still have never seen a band play with a guitar with a drill on it, which is surprising to me. Yeah, I don't know. This movie's fun and awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. This movie is outstanding. I, without hesitation, say that this is not only the best movie that we did on this show, but one of my, maybe this will probably go into my one of my favorite movies of this year that we've done on the show. I love this movie. I had never seen it before, surprisingly. I had heard about the reputation it had. And while some people will maybe nitpick and say that this isn't necessarily a heavy metal horror movie, it's more of a rockabilly horror movie, that dude's guitar is the definition of metal.
So metal. Yeah.
it's this crazy guitar with a drill on the end. The dude's wearing leather. Come on. Let us have this one. We all loved the first one, of course. We all, you know, gushed about how fun and inventive, and while it seems paint by numbers, it has a lot of tongue-in-cheek stuff going on. I think one of the main reasons is all three Slumber Party Massacre movies were written and directed by women, which I find very interesting, because on the surface these seem like pure male fantasies where you've got your girls in their lingerie prancing around, and then they're killed by this very phallic symbol of the drill. And so it seems like so much like a male fantasy, but when all three were written and directed by different women, I don't know, it kind of puts a whole new spin on it. And if the third one is anywhere near as good as these first two, it's A-okay in my book. This movie is so fun. The music in it, I actually like the music in this. I mean, the song that the killer sings when he's stalking this girl, I mean, it's like almost like a musical at one point. It's great. The girls in this movie are a lot of fun. I like that the girls have their own band. It's not about, you know, guys and their bands, and the girls are like their groupies or hangers-on. They have their own band. But they're not ashamed to eat a bunch of junk food and have pillow fights and spray each other with champagne and take their tops off. I mean, what more could you want than that scene right there where they're just chugging booze and eating junk food and getting naked? That's, to me, that's maybe one of the best things ever shot. This movie, like the other two movies, is ultra 80s. I mean, so 80s, in fact, between the clothing, the pink drumsticks, the music, it's even the furniture is very 80s in this, but it's a fun trip back to that decade, unlike the other two movies. This is, I think, amazingly rewatchable. I just watched this the other night, and I want to watch it again, and I probably will many times over. Now that all three Slumber Party Massacre movies are available on that Roger Corman Cult Classic box set, that'll be without a doubt my next DVD purchase. I was contemplating it after we watched Slumber Party Massacre 1, but now that we've watched this, it's a no-brainer. It's a must-own. I think this is great. I love that there were homages to Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th. The two cops that show up are Sergeant Voorhees and Sergeant Krueger. So they definitely were, you know, repping the classic slashers while kind of, you know, blazing their own trail as well. Like I said, I thought the girls were super cute. I thought Courtney Crystal Bernard from Wings, who I'd never really cared for in Wings, I thought was super cute in this and very likable and made for a good final girl. I liked how they kind of gave you previews of what was to come in the beginning with her crazy, like, flashy nightmare visions. All her nightmares were kind of like previews for coming attractions of awesome kills. It was just great. This movie is stylish and fun, and I mean, the key word here is fun. We love movies on this show that are kind of the epitome of fun, whether they're bad or good. And this one is certainly that. I think it's a good movie, and more importantly, it's a very fun movie. So if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out.
Yeah, I'm especially delighted that this movie is so good because I've heard nothing but awful things.
Really?
Yeah, everybody.
Oh, really?
Yeah, everybody I've heard stuff from about this is, you know, oh, it's not horror. It's like the death of slasher movies. It's when stuff started getting goofy instead of scary. And I mean, it is goofy more than scary, but I mean, that's kind of what I like about slasher movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, one thing that makes this movie stand out is that these characters are characters, and they're interesting, and they're not just cardboard cutouts like in the previous two movies, perhaps. You know, like they actually try to get you invested in these characters. There's a scene early on where Crystal Barnard's picked up by her friend, and they just start singing a song that's on the radio. And like just in that little tiny attention to do something, anything, in a movie like this, you're immediately drawn to these two characters, and they seem realer than if, you know, they were just driving around talking about dumb crap with horrible dialogue like most of these movies do. So, you know, I cared for that. And, you know, they've got, like, this porn book that they're hanging out with, and, like, they read from this, like, erotic literature book, and it seems very real. It seems like something that you would do perhaps if you were a youngster on a trip and you found an erotic literature book. You'd all huddle around it and make fun of it and stuff like this. It's just everything in this seems, you know, in terms of characters, seems grounded, which is what I think makes it so cool when everything goes crazy haywire later on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, that can be attributed to the fact that this was written and directed by a woman who probably, you know, has real life experience with her female friends to draw on rather than the shitty cliches that, you know, a lazy male writer would probably come up with. I mean, there's plenty of good male writers that can write good women, but I think in a movie like this where things tend to get cliched real quick, I think that pulls a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. I wish this had a soundtrack, because even though the music in this kind of sucks, like the songs that the female band plays, not the best songs in the world, but I would like to have that kind of Cramps-esque rockabilly songs that the killer sings.
Yeah,
and I'm sure the artwork for it would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, while I was watching this, like I sort of said earlier, the killer sort of reminded me of like a Mojo Nixon, but like real super tough. And I found out later that the Rock and Roll High School Forever director directed this, so it sort of seemed very like the scene in Rock and Roll High School Forever where Corey Feldman is dreaming, and Mojo Nixon comes out of his dream to tell him he's got to rock real hard. So it seems sort of like that scene to me now. Like, I don't know if that was not unintentional.
Yeah.
To sort of harken back to that.
I would like to mention that Deborah Brock, who wrote and directed this movie, besides going on to Rock and Roll High School Forever, which is probably the most, you know, notable and makes sense connection, she also went on to produce Honey, I Blew Up the Kid and Buffalo 66. Seemed like polar opposites and weird choices for the person that brought us Slumber Party Massacre 2. But we're glad you did, Deborah, and I wish you would have made a lot more awesome slashers like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that wraps it up for the Slumber Party Massacre Part 2. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll have like a guitar with a drill on it, and we'll sing some songs about killing you or whatever. I don't know.
Parker, yep. Just be honest. We're going to shoot hot pussy blood all over everybody's faces.
I wanted to keep it a surprise.
You guys can do that. I'll just be worshiping Satan.
All right, now listen up. This is the plan.
Scientific data reveals that all your friends are good for stealing your comic books and getting cigarette burns on your couch. That's why you need more internet friends. And we nominate JFD to be your new BFF. Like Junk Food Dinner on Facebook, and we can buddy up and chit-chat about bad movies and good movies and Corey Feldman movies.
Very intense.
All right, metalheads, that just about wraps up episode number 107 of Junk Food Dinner. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. If you like the show, make sure you're getting your daily dose of Junk Food Dinner by visiting us on our website at junkfooddinner.com. There you can find all of our back episodes easily cataloged for your listening pleasure. You can stream them right there on the website, or download the MP3s for listening later, or make it easy on yourself and your loved ones by subscribing to the show on iTunes. There you can have the show delivered directly to your iPhone, iPad, iPod, or just your iTunes on your computer as soon as it's available, and listen to the show that way. Hey, while you're on iTunes, do us a huge solid and leave us a favorable review, and give us some stars. We get nutrients from those stars, and it helps spread the word about the podcast and gets people turned on to it. So if you want to help out the show, give us a good review on iTunes. If you don't,
and if you want to turn people on.
Yeah, and who doesn't? You want to turn us on, you'll get in contact with us and give us a call on our voicemail line at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. The next best thing to calling your favorite porn line is calling us up and leaving us a voicemail and letting us know what you thought about the latest episode of Junk Food Dinner, or if you got some movies that you want us to watch, or if you just want to express your undying love for us, give us a call. If you want to go the old-fashioned route and send us an email, you can do so at jfdpodcast@gmail.com, or if you're on those newfangled Facebooks or Twitters, hook up with us there, link up, talk about movies. It'll be fun. We'll be friends. Next week, it should be a hell of a good show. We got Party Animal from 1984, Boarding House, and I watched the preview for that, and oh lord, that's going to be fun. And we got Hellgate from 1989, so it should be a good show. Make sure you tune in for that. We'll have all of your favorite segments and more weirdness from Junk Food Dinner. So for Mark Fredo, Parker Bowman, and Junk Food Dinner, this is Kevin Moss saying adios, everybody. We'll see you next week. God.
We accept the challenge. We'll fight. We'll never lose.